In 2020, the world shut down for just about everyone. Suddenly, remote work was a reality for most people. As a person who has taught online for more than 25 years, who has trained and developed faculty around remote education for that entire time, I knew there would be pitfalls and trials, but I had no idea of the polarization it would also create. By 2021, most pundits were blaming remote learning in the K-12 system for everything from massive learning loss to psychosocial problems to abuse and even worries of nourishment for some students. At the same time, employers were all over the place. Some loved the freedom of untethering their workforce from a building, while others pasted the mantra on their email signatures, which said, "I can't wait to get back to normal." In other words, some leaders knew exactly how to pivot, or at least how to work through a pivot, and others never really got out of fight or flight mode. That was 2 years ago. As a recent Forbes article points out, as of 2023, one-third of workers at home are at home full-time or part-time. Currently, 16% of companies operate fully remotely. 12.7% of full-time employees work from home, which illustrates a rapid normalization of remote work environments. This model combines both home and in-office working, offering flexibility and maintaining a level of physical presence at the workplace. And articles in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal share that more and more millennial-age workers are leaving businesses if they don't offer this kind of flexibility. In fact, again, according to that Forbes article, 98% of surveyed workers want to work remotely, at least in some capacity. So much so that by 2025, nearly 40% of the workforce is going to be remote. I met our guest today during my first run as an evangelist, lowercase e. We trained faculty around the country in the practices of e-learning. We showed them how to create engagement, how to generate retention, how to keep interest. During that time, I got to know her amazing diversity as a professional. She wrote reviews for heavy metal magazines. She interviewed some of the biggest bands of the 90s. She began doing assessment work with accreditation organizations, helping assess higher ed's efficacy. Her hair color changed from blue to green to yellow almost every month, and her love of tattoo art was fascinating. It is my absolute pleasure to introduce to you a colleague and a dear friend, Dr. Erin Haiman. She is currently the Associate Vice Provost of Learning Experience at National University. It's so good to have you here. Hi, Erin.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I think back to those days when we had to travel to nowhere, Nebraska, or the middle of nothing, Kentucky. Don't you wish that remote learning was more in vogue at that time?
Oh, my goodness. I do, except I will say that a lot of those nowheres, especially Great Bend, Kansas, is my favorite nowhere land. It provides now, I mean, some great experiences. I definitely thought I was going to die at the time, but, you know, keep in mind, I was 20-some-year-old, as we both were, and just getting into this whole, what does it mean to be a professional sort of element. And I think then, you know, being in the big city was where I wanted to be. And boy, has that changed over the years. So yeah, I mean, on one hand, I think it would have been great to not have to travel to those places, but they certainly built up my experience and ones now that I look back upon, you know, knowing that it changed who I am and made me who I am.
Nice. They built character. I like that. And they also gave us some airline miles.
Exactly.
All right. So I obviously introduced you to the degree that I can. I'd love for you to tell our listening audience just a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. Well, first, it's too bad you can't see what color my hair is today, but I'll leave you guessing on that. So as Dr. Borden said, I started teaching when I was 22, a bit older than that now, and I was in the face-to-face classroom. I had thought by probably second grade that I wanted to be a teacher. I loved to read. I loved to write. I loved poetry. I loved music. As Jeff mentioned, I mean, I think that also really being able to come into college, I started school as soon as I got out of high school. I just knew in my head, I would be an instructor at some in some shape or form. So I did what I needed to do for school. I got through my master's degree and started teaching during that time, teaching English at University of Colorado. Taught English composition to a bunch of students who really didn't want to be in an English composition course, to my dismay. And I had visions of, writing poetry in a castle on vellum with quill and ink and all those, fanciful things. And then somebody came to me one day and said, "Hey, we'd love for you to teach in this great new opportunity of online education." This was about 1995. So I thought, visions again, castles, vellum, all of that. I politely declined and said, "I will continue this quote unquote real teaching in a quote unquote real classroom." And then being adjunct, they said to me, "Well, that's all we have this term, so take it or leave it." Changed my mind. I said, "I will try it. I will bungle my way through this crazy new online whatever. I am of the age that I probably should have at least had an Atari or something at home. I did not. I really was kind of an old school, like just write with my pen, and I wasn't that into electronics at all. So I didn't own a computer. I didn't really know what email was. I knew it existed, but I'd never really internalized it for myself. So I thought, well, I'll get this semester over with. I'll continue teaching. Go on with my life in the quote unquote real classroom." And I still refused to buy a computer. I ended up building an online course. You had to learn HTML, all the things, all the fancy WYSIWYGs that are there now in learning management systems were not there. I had to learn how to use email. I had to do all the things that I think most people were starting to do anyway. But I thought, well, I'll give it a go and go back to teaching. What I found out was, one, this really resonated with me. I came from a small town, Florissant, Colorado. I had to go to Denver. I didn't have to go to Denver, but I went to Denver to a larger university to go to school. And I thought about halfway through this class, how the opportunities it might have for other students in rural situations where maybe they couldn't get to a bigger city, where they
Right.
couldn't get to the university of their choice. That resonated with me. Then, especially at the time, everything was in writing. So our what we call threaded discussions, as everybody's familiar with now, everything had to be written and read and communicated 99% online. And so that started to resonate with me as a composition instructor, kind of practice makes perfect. So about halfway through that class, I thought, there might be something to this crazy online development. And that one class changed the direction of my career forever. So instead of going straight through for my doctorate, I probably would have gone for a PhD in creative writing. I would have probably developed a tick like all of my favorite crazy instructors had. I had this vision of what an instructor should be. So I didn't go on for my doctorate. I ended up at E College, Little E, where I met Jeff Borden, and we had an amazing time together learning and developing and training other faculty. Yes, the travel to some crazy places, but some amazing places as well. And I was there for almost 10 years, went from a course developer to instructional designer, eventually was the director of the academic technology or academic consulting department. And again, changed everything for me.
At Horizon Credit Union, community is who we serve, and helping you grow is our goal. Your path is our purpose, and together we can make a positive impact. Whether you're ready for a checking account, a home loan, or a team that cares about your dreams, doing business here does good in the community. Discover the difference and open your account today or find a branch near you at hzcu.org. Horizon Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity lender insured by NCUA.
I didn't realize you and I came to this pretty similarly. I was basically asked as the low man on the totem pole at UNC, "Hey, do you want to try this new e-learning thing?" And I also said, "Not really." And they said, "Well, no one else would do it, and so you're up." So I didn't know you and I had that in common. And so Aaron, after you and I kind of parted company 10 years in, you really went on a trajectory where you then began working remotely almost from the beginning of that, right?
Well, at first I went back to, well, went to Southern California for and developed an online program for a nursing school, smaller nursing school at the time. That was not remote, but it still involved online education. It really was looking at the components at that time, you know, the credit hour piece. So we still deal with credit hour was really at the front and center of everybody's mind. Like, how do we make sure that anything you put online is going to be counted down to the minute of credit hour? So I helped develop the sort of academic side, bringing in faculty development of an online program for a nursing school, and ended up being there for about 8 years. As I moved into the assessment world, as I moved into the accreditation and regulatory world, that was mostly face-to-face, but it had the forefront of creating courses for that online learner.
And then you started traveling the country.
Yeah. And
doing your work from amazing places, Lake Havasu and Niagara Falls, right?
Yes. So my husband dragged me back to Colorado, kicking and screaming from the lovely Southern California weather. And soon thereafter, I started working remotely in Colorado, again, for another healthcare university. And then had the opportunity to work for a regional accreditor, working on a Lumina grant, looking at student outcomes and leadership around the visibility and uplift for student learning outcomes. And at that time, yeah, my husband and I just decided to sell everything, get in an RV and go. And we did that for 3 years. And I went back to my teaching roots and started teaching online courses again. But during that time, yeah, we went from, you know, every four corners of the United States, we were able to work from. And it was kind of funny. Little side note, my husband's in IT. And so he had all of the wireless connections. We looked like we probably came out from the FBI when we were rolling into some of these campsites. We'd walk in and or drive in and antennas would be coming up from all ends of the RV. So we were able to continue to work remotely, but amazing experience. And yes, and this was actually pre-pandemic. So people were starting to understand that people could do their work while they were, you know, maybe in different parts of the country, different parts of their house, different parts of, you know, their landscape and lives. And so that was an amazing opportunity. But that really solidified for me, this is how I wanted to work for the rest of my life.
I can't imagine the book that's going to come out of that at some point. I can't wait to read it. And so that gets us to a place now. I hope the audience fully understands that you have led people, teams in both contexts. And that really is at the crux of what we want to talk about today. Can you lead from afar? I think that's the title of our podcast today. How easy is that to do? How hard is that to do? What are some of the practices that we want to consider? So as we kind of now jump toward the main topic, I want to go back to, I started the very first podcast by talking about my favorite word in conjunction with leadership, and that word is intentional. I think leadership can happen accidentally, but it's rare. And if it happens, it can't be replicated. Intentional matters. And I ask all my guests, what is your favorite word when it comes to leadership?
Well, I would have said intentional, but you already got that one. So I would say probably adaptive, which I know is very close to, you know, situational leadership. But adaptive would be my close second to intentional, but then also empathetic. I had to choose between those two, but adaptive.
Another one of my favorites. That's a good word. So if adaptive leadership, which I think we actually now have a healthy amount of research suggesting that really is a key to ongoing success. Again, you can be autocratic for a short time. You can be, you know, something else for a short time, but if you really want to navigate the landscape successfully over time, you've got to adapt and change your techniques, your thoughts, your strategies. What are the variables that then get added in to that sort of equation of what will make a leader successful in a remote context? What have you found you really need to have your eye on that may be different from a face-to-face context or just additive as you get into that sort of situation?
I think really the idea here, truly, I'll stick to the intentionality. You have to be intentional about everything that you do in a remote situation. I think people, especially pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic happened, and I think there was this backlash, even though the remote opportunities were starting and an online education was starting to really gain, I think, some traction. All of a sudden, the world was a mess. And everything that I thought we had already solved for in many ways came back up. The whole thing about, you know, connection and, you know, intentionality around equity, all of these pieces that I thought, having been in kind of the online space and remote space for as long as I had been, it had all been solved. And clearly, when it came up to be this much larger opportunity or need, a lot of those pieces that I thought we answered in 1997 came back up. And so that piece, to be able to come back to, again, adapt, but then be empathetic to everybody's situation. So because I have good internet, because my husband's in IT and he can solve whatever goes wrong generally with the computer and with the internet, it doesn't mean everybody's that way. And not everybody's comfortable on camera, and not everybody, you know, has the ability to, you know, have, they've got children at home. I've got dogs. They will, I'm sure, bark at the most inopportune time. But it really, you have to continue to be empathetic of who you're leading and who you're working with, and understand that they are going to come to you with some issues that maybe you never thought of. So the whole time that you're in a leadership situation, and making sure or helping to make sure that wherever you work continues with the good work of what they're tasked to do, every moment has to have both the intentionality and the empathy to continue.
You know, that's a really great point. I hadn't thought much about it just because, like you, I have been focused so largely on education. I was complaining throughout the pandemic, we know how to do this. Stop going off on your own and, you know, looking up on Google, how do I teach an online course? There are much better places you can get information about how to do this well. But I'm sure the same was true of remote work. And I was so myopically focused on education, I didn't think much about it, but I'm sure that you're right. Did you hear much about that during the pandemic? But you probably thought about that a lot.
I thought about it quite a bit. And what was interesting is, I think just in the same way that my first online course, I think a lot of companies thought the same thing during the pandemic. Well, we'll get through this and then we'll get back to normal. We'll get back to our quote unquote real work. And we found, I think a lot of people found that, oh, this resonated just in the same way it did with me, that online course. This is something I can do. This is something I can be successful at. I'll use my husband as an example. So he has, you know, or had a face-to-face job, went into the office every day, pandemic forced them to work remotely. They didn't know what would happen. I think everybody, and it's for a bank, he does cybersecurity for a bank. And so I think most of the people thought, well, we'll get through this. Everybody will come back to work, come back to normal. And along the way, all the workers said, this is great. And the bank realized that everybody was still producing, whatever that means. And so, you know, their numbers didn't go down. They were happy. They were getting to meetings. Nobody really trained them. They, you know, the word of the century is pivot. And so they truly pivoted to move in that direction that could, because they had to. And then they realized that a lot of their workers would rather work remotely than come into an office every day. So lo and behold, they listened to their workers and they're still working remotely with one day during the week that they go in, because that's what they asked for. That connection is still, that human connection is still very important. And so yeah. I think a lot of those pieces play into the intentionality piece as well, because you have to make those connections. And as much as I am an advocate for online, as much as I know that learning can happen online, that connection can happen online, there's still something that's not quite the same. And we know that. And that human connection is important.
So you used another word in your response just now that I want to focus in on for a second. There's a pretty famous little clip out on the web, Simon Sinek's talking about a matrix of productivity on one axis and trust on another axis. And he largely argues that the leaders in the military are those that are highly trusted, and they waver between being highly productive and not. That the people who are always productive, but nobody trusts them, unfortunately, often get the raises and the promotions, and they're leading organizations in ways that the culture just gets demolished. So you use the word production. I'm curious, as a remote leader, how do you measure productivity? How do you measure trust? How do you influence those things and help the people who are in your care actually be productive while sort of creating an environment of trust with one another?
That's kind of a tough question. I had to actually look up the productivity and trust piece. But yes, I think, you know, one, any institution or any organization that you're a part of has some sort of production. In education, we don't often like to say it, but education is a product. It can be a product. Students can be customers. I know that's not quite the same. We could certainly argue that point for a while, but I think the idea is whatever your organization does, that output is your productivity. And so that should, I think, remain the same, whether you're online or on ground. Obviously, if you're making things in an assembly line with your hands, that's harder to do online than it is in a factory. But when you're talking about education, you can still deliver that product of education online. And so from a school's perspective or university's perspective, I don't think much changes in terms of what that institution produces. What does change, I do think, is that trust piece. And that goes back to the human connection. And so, and intentionality and adaptivity and empathy. So the idea that you need to be present, you need to be able to have empathy and listen and create those moments in time that maybe just happen in a face-to-face environment. I remember thinking when the pandemic did hit, and we realized this was going to be a long-term thing, and the conferences started going virtual. And so even as a remote employee, for as long as I have been, I always looked forward to those in-person conferences and those networking events and getting to see people. And when we started going to the virtual conferences, yeah, the sessions were good. They're fine. You know, then you go to the sessions but there was still something lacking. And what I realized it was, is I call it missing the in-between. It was the in-between the conference sessions that I missed more than the conference sessions themselves. Yes, you can get those online. Same way with courses, same way with working. You can get those pieces online. What you don't get, or it's harder to do, is that in-between. So you have to be as intentional about those in-between moments. And sometimes that translates to more Zoom meetings. And of course, we know physiologically, it is more tiring. Your brain has to work harder to maneuver and to listen and to process the images that are on the screen. It's harder for your brain to do. So people talk about Zoom fatigue or WebEx fatigue. It's a thing. And so the last thing you want to do is require people to come to more meetings, right? But you have to sort of maneuver around the idea of the water cooler or just the social connection meeting. They have to be intentional. They might feel a little artificial, but I think that's a piece that really goes far with building up the trust and building the availability and transparency of you as a leader, or those moments of in between.
So Aaron, I have one more question before we bring in our Gonzaga alum and we broaden the conversation a bit. You and I have worked now at a couple of institutions together. And I would love for you to share with the audience that intentionality that you're describing for those in-between moments with regard to things like one-on-ones and those social committee events that get mm-hmm. put on for your team. Even if you want to go into quarterly, you know, assessments and reports of people, those are the things that those are not higher ed centric. Those are everywhere. How have you done that? I've seen you do that pretty effectively from a remote perspective. Can you explain that just a little bit to the audience?
Yeah. So again, it's a matter of setting meetings. We have a leadership team meeting. So my direct reports, we meet weekly or more, depending, but every week for sure as a group. I have individual one-on-ones weekly. Sometimes they take 15 minutes. Sometimes they take 45 minutes. It just depends on what's on everybody's plates. And if people really don't have anything, because they're so frequent, we can cancel. So I think that, you know, keeping in close contact, even if it's, hey, how are you doing today? Or, hey, happy Monday. Or, you know, just give a time to vent. That's important too. And allow for those moments to happen. Again, they have to be a little more intentional than just running into somebody in the hallway or in the, you know, break room. But make those moments and schedule those moments and be available for times that don't necessarily come up on a calendar. I think that's big as well. Utilize the technology. We use Teams a lot. Sometimes that's good and bad. You know, we always have the back channel when, you know, there are bigger meetings and broader meetings going on. Somebody's always chattering on Teams. That can be good because it continues to build that connection. It can be bad because then you're multitasking all the time. But I think it builds into what creates, again, that visibility, the agency, I think, for everybody. And then to know that you're a part of a team that continues to connect.
Yeah. And I also have got to give a shout out to some of your team members. I always liked the starting of team meetings or Zoom meetings with that music going. And so everybody's hearing the music and everyone's tapping along to some good old 90s classic or whatever's playing. Some pretty cool uses of technology.
We have a pretty big team, upwards of 80 people in our learning experience team. And when we have the larger meetings, which we do, I mean, we have the smaller and the manager and department meetings, but we have what were called learning exchanges, which were started by my good colleague, Jeff. We continue to have those. So it's just learning opportunities for everybody to come and share and learn from one another. We also have all team meetings, which are a little more operational, but bring the full team together just to update on what the different people are doing. You know, we talk about our mission, our vision. We've got what we call our ways of working at our organization institution. So we're starting to do examples of that, and always kudos all the time. So we shout out to the folks, you know, at the broader level, individual opportunities and raise them up. So I think that's important as well.
Oh, those are some really nice mechanics that I hope people are jotting some of these down. So at this point, I'd love to again widen the conversation a little bit. In our first few podcasts, we brought in students to discover how a speaker's topic related to their studies at the time. Today, we have a former organizational leadership and a doctoral graduate from Gonzaga. She's come back to teach with us. Barbara Kingsley teaches not only ethics and leadership seminar as an adjunct faculty, but she happens to own and operate a remote consulting business that she started in 1998. So I think that's incredibly fortuitous for us. I think the conversation is about to go nice and deep as well as wide. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I would love for you to just share a little bit more with the audience about who you are, your background, stuff like that, before we add some extra questions to the mix.
Yeah, thank you so much. I own and operate a company, a consulting company, as you mentioned. We are called Kingsley Climbing Group, and we work with clients to help them communicate more effectively with their customers or internally. And we do a lot of work in the world of plain language, so helping simplify things that are complex. And we are sort of surrounded by overly complex information, so we help organizations clarify that to help their end users. As you mentioned, I started the company with my partner in 1998, and we were by necessity at that time a remote company because we didn't have an office space. So my partner Susan worked at home and I worked at home, and we had another individual who worked at home, and we really started our company as a remote company and continued that to this day. So yes, have a lot of experience with remote work.
I love that. That's again, that's situationally aware. So I'm so glad that you're here. I got to tell you, this is not going to resonate if anyone listens to this podcast in July, but right now, today it's January 17th here in Spokane, and we are getting snowed on. It is dumping outside my window right now, and I can't wait to try to get home. That yet another reason for remote work, right? There are so many little logistical elements that apply to different people in different ways at different times in different contexts. When you add them all up, I think they start to become significant. Barbara, I want to just go back to, you got to hear the first part of this interview. Based on what you heard, anything stand out to you? Anything stick out based on, again, your history here at Gonzaga with what you do for your own work, anything specific to your leadership studies? Love to just open up for questions about what you heard in the first part.
Sure. You know, I thought it was very interesting, Aaron, what you were saying about when the pandemic started and your first thought was, hey, we've been doing this all these years. And you know, now suddenly it was like this new world and you know, no one had, you know, seemed like nobody knew what they were doing exactly. And I thought it was interesting because I think that in education was a lot further along with this. And there was an intentionality in education in creating distance learning. Whereas I think organizations had no such intentionality. Not all of them. I mean, I'm sure some did, and probably depending on their workforce. But I think that's what was interesting to me, is it made me think, gosh, the difference was education was really positioned for this because it had really thought through the challenges already, whereas the work world wasn't quite there. So I thought that was, I wonder what you think about that. Do you think organizations were just sort of caught slightly unprepared?
Yeah. And in fact, I think education was caught unprepared as well. And that's the piece I think that really surprised me, because to your point, Barbara, I thought most of the schools had figured this out by now, this being online ed something, right? And so we hear all of these pieces come up about emergency, you know, distance learning or emergency online teaching and all of these things that came up during the pandemic. And no, that's not effective. And it probably did lead to all of these things around not effective learning. I heard about this more in the K-12 space than higher ed. But I thought, too, that all of education was, in fact, positioned better to handle something like a global pandemic where now you were forced to be online. And that's, I think, what really surprised me the most, is there was a lot of pushback. There was a lot at the time. We had our nephew living with us, and he was taking some online courses and had just been thrust into this emergency remote teaching, and they were horrible, horrible. And I was thinking to myself, how on earth has this not been taken care of by now? But even so, I think, yes, the school was positioned in a different way to be successful than a lot of the other workforce. But yeah, I was really surprised in how unprepared really they seem to be.
I'd like to ask both of you, as you have experience here, outside of higher ed, in just sort of the work world, whatever that might be. And I know that includes government and commercial and, you know, all sorts of things. I have only heard, now that we're a year and a half basically out of COVID, that they really have, they bounced back, and they often tried to go overboard with getting everyone back local, but now they've shifted back to much more hybrid. Are you all hearing that as well and finding that as well in your circles?
Yeah. I mean, I am for sure. I mean, like I said, the example of my husband, they thought they would start bringing everybody back to work. And then the workers all said, you know, we'd really love to stay remote to the extent that's possible. And so I think too, to what you were talking about, Jeff, about the, you know, the weather and the traffic. I mean, oh my goodness, the time that we as humans take to get on the road and get to a place to work, especially if you're rural. That's one thing, that's distance. Or if you're in a congested city, the amount of time that you can spend off of the highway being productive, back to that word, in a space, I think saves us a lot of time too. And I think while people were thinking about for themselves, gosh, this made a lot of difference and I didn't have to waste time driving, that resonated with a lot of the companies as well.
Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing just with clients and others that I work with. It's almost like we shifted all the way, the pendulum all the way over here to complete remote out of necessity. We had to in March of 2020. And then there was this idea, okay, we need to shift the all the way over here to going back in person. And I think what happened was when organizations tried to go all the way back to in-person is that there was some resistance, because even if people wanted to be back in person part of the time, they sort of liked the flexibility, you know, oh, hey, my kid has a doctor appointment. I would like to just have the flexibility to be able to do that. Or I'd like to maybe have a day where I can be at home and put doing laundry in between some of my scheduled calls. So I think that now it's organizations responding, or sometimes not, but responding to their employees and saying, hey, how can we maybe shift this back a little bit to the middle where we're giving people some of this quality of life that they want, in addition to having them in the office in the time that we want them to. So I think we're just seeing a shift potentially, hopefully, back to a little bit more middle.
Barbara, as you teach ethics for us, you know that there are some elements in the ethics equation of trust and transparency and grace, as well as accountability and those sorts of things. I don't know if we have any audience members who would be listening to this really adamantly on one side of the fence or another, you know, screaming at their radio right now, if they're listening to it in their car. But I want to say something that I think is a bit of an elephant in the room for people who are very anti remote work. And that is, I don't trust that people are working. I'm wondering, how can we address that? I think it's a legitimate concern. I get it. I don't know that I would suggest that any leader approach their workforce from the position that they don't trust them out of the gate, or that they assume that they're not working. However, we even had, when Aaron and I were working at the learning remote company, there was one of the presidents we had at one point who didn't like remote work, which I just thought was incredibly ironic for a place that was promoting remote learning. He wouldn't let workers work remotely. So I'm wondering, how do we help leaders grapple with that elephant in the room around, are people working?
I want to start and say, I think that's such a cynical way to view your workforce, that it's coming from a place of mistrust, and that to me is never going to be the right place to have your leadership. I think the bottom line is to, again, start with coming from a place of trust, but I think also thinking about each of your employees as individuals. And I think it gets a little bit like, hey, we're going to just group everyone together. And that's not fair, because some people are probably doing fine with it. Some people may be struggling with it, but it might not be because they're ill-intentioned. It could be because they're just struggling with, how do I discipline myself, or how do I do things in a new way? So I think the better way to look at this is, again, focus on people as individuals. And if someone might be struggling, whatever that looks like, I put struggling in air quotes, but if you think they might be struggling, maybe start by assuming it's not because they just don't want to work, but because maybe they are having challenges, and then connecting with them to try to understand what those are and address it.
Yeah, that sounds an awful lot like what you would probably do in person too, right, Barbara? So it's, you know, if somebody's struggling in one sense or another, you connect with them, you ask them questions. And it could go back to the same thing with, you know, the school piece. And maybe their internet isn't great. Maybe they do, you know, truly have a connection issue where they're not on camera, or they don't love to be on camera all the time, or it makes them tired, for heaven's sakes. It does, to be on all the time. So I think too, it reminds me of, you know, just the whole like learning in person versus online. And we assume some of that just because you are in class, you're learning. And of course we know that that's not true. So the same thing can be said for office work. Just because I can, you know, daydream and procrastinate and do all sorts of things and talk to my coworkers forever and not work, almost easier in an office space than at home. I personally have found that I work more, whatever that means again. My time is more focused on work, it's a better way to put it, in an online remote space than in a face-to-face place, because there are interruptions. I always feel like I got to go up and see, you know, who brought new cookies to the break room. I mean, so, you know, there are all these pieces that really, you know, could be distracting in the work environment as well. But yeah, I think in today's day and age, I mean, we need to approach our workers from, to your point, Barbara, a point of trust than distrust, and whether you're online or face-to-face.
Here's one of those connections that I actually did make during the pandemic. I thought about this. They were surveying and studying student cheating in online spaces, and they found that cheating suddenly went up. And I thought that that was interesting, that it went up by students who didn't want to be online, whereas the students who had always wanted to be online and were online, they found no more cheating whatsoever than in a face-to-face class. Similarly, I have not really seen any surveys of employees or workers that suggested that they actually didn't work more when they were remote. And I know that there were all sorts of psychological reasoning that they gave for that. They said people felt like they were being watched. People felt like they felt guilty because, you know, they were taking a break 30 minutes with their spouse who happened to be at home. And they felt like that was somehow a little mini vacation. And so they had to work the extra 30 minutes. Whereas if they were at work, they would have just gone to the break room and not thought a thing of it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that that was interesting, that those sector surveys really showed most people, other than a few who didn't want to be online and sort of maybe were dragging their feet or trying to prove a point, were actually working harder.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, I think. And in some ways, I mean, the whole guilt thing is interesting, because earlier on, there were moments where I thought I needed to be online all the time. And there are some times that I feel that way now, but it's a different reason. But I thought, well, gosh, I don't have to drive into the office, so I need to be here all the time, online, reachable. And that flexibility somehow needed to equate to never shutting off. And so I think that's an important piece too for building relationships and building trust, is allowing people to have that time away from your computer or your phone or whatever it is too.
Aaron, let me ask
I don't want to. No, I just want to say that's such a great point, because I think that one of the pieces of advice I've always given people in remote work is to plan breaks, to literally, just like you would in the office, you know, take a lunch break, go out and take a quick 10-minute walk, clear your head, because it is a bit easier when you are in a remote environment to fall into the trap of, I need to be on from 6 a.m. when I wake up until forever, because I can be, because I'm at home. So everything that you can do to sort of create more of a space, even if it's creating a little bit of an office space at home, or a space where you just do work, setting up your office hours, those kinds of things, I think can really help people not fall into that trap. And also, by extension, I feel like if you're always online, you know, then your employer might think, oh, well, gosh, they're at home and they're right in front of their computer. I should be able to contact them anytime. And right. So I think on both sides, there has to be that respect there that, hey, you know, we have to have some boundaries and some ability to have our own time and our own space, even if we're working at home.
Yeah. That actually reminds me, two organizations ago, there was a manager who really top notch. Everyone loved this human. He began, when the pandemic started, he began taking many of his one-on-ones with earbuds in his ears as he was walking around his neighborhood. And it's funny, he said to me at one point, he goes, you know, I always could have done this when I was in the office. I never would have thought to. And so he was getting some really nice health benefits, and no one was usually the wiser unless he walked by a dog barking in a yard or something. And he just really enjoyed that. And his team said that he was more energized and more enthusiastic, and just sort of, he felt sharper. As we know, movement impacts the brain in tremendously powerful ways. So I thought that was a nice use of that moment.
Yep.
I want to ask a question. Barbara, I'd like to start with you, since you do teach in our leadership program and you know servant leadership pretty well. We are associated with servant leadership. And then Aaron, after I asked Barbara to define servant leadership in a meaningful sort of business-like context for the purposes of this conversation, I'll ask you, how can that be accomplished remotely? So Barbara, could you just give the audience sort of a primer about the concept of servant leadership? It's obviously something near and dear to our hearts at Gonzaga. While I think we promote adaptive as sort of the predominant view, servant then becomes one of the options for someone in that adaptive nature. Could you tell everybody what servant leadership is here?
Yeah, so I think servant leadership to me sort of turns a lot of what traditionally we have thought about leadership just on its head, which with the idea being that, you know, the sort of traditional is that you have this leader and then you have these employees or people that are in service to the leader, that are essentially servants to that leader. And servant leadership flips that around, that as the leader, you are the servant to those who work for you and work with you. And that by being a servant to them, you are providing many, there were so many aspects to this, but, you know, listening, attention, care, empathy, all of these things that you are providing to the people who work for you and with you. And by doing so, what you're really doing is getting the best out of them. Because if you are turning all this attention and empathy and care to these people, you're really allowing the best of them to shine through for your entire organization to prosper. So I think that servant leadership is really, it's about putting those individuals first, that is your job as a leader. So that's my little primer on servant leadership. Jeff, beautiful. I don't know if you might want to add more.
No, that's beautifully said. So Aaron, pragmatically, practically, how can leaders embrace that style of leadership or some of those aptitudes in their actual day-to-day transactions with their staff, their executive teams, whomever that might be or look like? How have you found in your history to be able to embrace and embody some of those elements?
Yeah, I think that the optimal way that you can do this online is the same way you would do it in a face-to-face forum, which is be available, be empathetic, and help to problem solve. And so, I mean, my staff knows from my direct reports to, you know, their reports and their reports that they can come to me. I mean, we call it the open door policy and face-to-face, but it's really kind of the same thing. So having the ability and the technical, you know, the technical pieces and opportunities to allow, so for Teams, for instance, or Slack or something that allow for people to just hit you up when they need to and just be available to them. The empathy piece, I think, is really big as well. So there are some people on my team who, you know, don't want to be on camera all the time. That's fine. In most time, you know, for most meetings, that's great. If that's really something they're not comfortable with, if it allows them to not focus so much on, you know, we stare at ourselves an awful lot in the Zoom days. But being able to understand what makes them comfortable, what makes them uncomfortable, and just being available to listen, to learn, and to support. I think that's really the biggest things. And so a lot of it's tech enabled, but some of it's just making sure people know. And sometimes you have to just reach out and say, hey, do you need me today? Do you need me to step in on this issue? any of those pieces. They just need to know that you're there.
Aaron, I think it's, I love what you're saying. And the word I keep thinking about is presence, having presence with people, because you can be in the same office environment with somebody and not be present.
Absolutely.
And you can be in a remote work environment and be very present. It's really about a state of mind and how you're showing up for the people that you work with, you know, your employees, your colleagues. So that presence is what I think you're talking about, and I love it.
Yeah.
Outstanding thoughts here. I hope a lot of people are, again, taking some notes here. Was something you said, just, I saw this little thing in, I think it was in the LA Times, talking about how some psychologists had found that on Zoom calls, people spend more time focusing on themselves than they do on the other people on the Zoom call. I thought, that's about right. That's very narcissistic of us, isn't it?
We're so concerned about how we look. I mean, it was great when Zoom finally enabled to like turn my camera off. And it's
that's right.
Mine is on, but
I also want to harken back to something, Aaron, that you have said multiple times throughout this conversation. Another value here at Gonzaga, one of the Ignatian values that we talk about, is the dignity of others. And servant leadership, I think, also embodies or embraces the dignity of others. And you have said multiple times, pay attention to your worker. If they don't want to be on camera, there may be a really good reason. If they need something that's a little unique in their particular remote situation, that might be perfectly okay. And it doesn't necessarily have to impact anything from a productivity standpoint, nor from a trust standpoint. And so I just really appreciate that you've peppered this conversation with, take everybody as an individual, think about their needs, just as you're thinking about the needs of your business, your production, your whatever. And that really does give people some degree of dignity, as you said earlier, agency, to feel like they're contributing in a meaningful way. I just love that. Well, ladies, this has been a brilliant conversation. I have loved every minute of it. Unfortunately, we can't do this forever, so we're going to wrap things up. I want to give you both a bit of a final word here. I'd like to start with Barbara. What are your thoughts as sort of a summation of what we've talked about, and anything else that you'd like to leave our listening audience with?
Well, you know, I think that remote work or all of these tools, it really is about process. But I think the point is focusing on people, and you can do work in many different ways. But I think that if you're focused on your people, if you're focused on the individuals and what they need and what, you know, what makes them tick, what do they need to make their lives better, to make their work lives better, then I think that you can find the best processes. I think the worst is when we try to impose something, either, you know, it could be imposing having to be in the office all the time or having to be online all the time. I think it's better to talk to people individually. What do you want? What do you need? How can we do that? And I think organizations struggle because they want to, you know, they want to have procedures and they want to say, this is what we're going to do. And now everybody, you know, this makes it easier for us. But I really do think the more we can be adaptive to individuals' needs, the better our organizations will be.
I love that. In fact, I'll bring that back around after I let Aaron have her final word. So Aaron, your thoughts about this conversation.
Well, first is a wonderful conversation, and I could do this all day, as you know, Jeff. We've had these conversations a lot, which is wonderful. As far as, you know, the leadership part of it, really the words that keep coming back are, to me, adaptive, intentional, and empathy. I think those pieces really have a place not only in the leadership function, but in, you know, just how we treat each other every day as our coworkers, as our colleagues, as individuals and common thinkers, really. No matter what you're producing, whatever that looks like in your organization or your university, it really comes down to respect. And I love that word, dignity, you know, just to allow people their own efficacy, their own dignity. And as a leader, help to bring people up or uplift them to wherever they need to grow to. That's really where I think that it can revolve around. And that looks similar, whether it's face-to-face or remote, actually.
Well, I hope, if nothing else, people have heard in this particular podcast that we continue to come back to, it's not about the organization as much as it's about the people that make up that organization. And that really is a crucial component of all of this. As you have listened to these Living Leadership podcasts, I hope that you're enjoying them. I hope that you're finding value in them and finding some tangible, practical things that you can try tomorrow in your own organizations. Whether that's the series that's hosted by former Dean Joe Albert or this series that's hosted by me, I hope that you're really getting a sense of the power and importance of intentional leadership and leadership that puts people at the forefront. I want to thank our two guests today, Barbara, Aaron. I can't tell you how tickled this has made me. I really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you once again.
Thank you.
To our audience, thank you for listening. We will see you at the next one. I guess hear you at the next one. Good luck and good leading.